Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Rashida Hassan is a seasoned leader with over 15 years of experience spanning industries such as media, entertainment, banking, and technology. Currently serving as VP, Chief of Staff, and Office of the CHRO Lead at the New York Times, Rashida acts as a trusted advisor to the CHRO, leading critical functions such as operations, program management, HR analytics, and payroll. Her career journey has been marked by roles at organizations like the New York Times, Viacom, and Bank of America, where she has consistently driven operational excellence and organizational transformation. Rashida holds a master's degree in psychology, where her research focused on improving leadership behavior, a passion that informs her people-first approach. She is dedicated to fostering organizational conditions that value collaboration, respect, and intentional direction while balancing the demands of complex global enterprises. Today, we'll explore Rashida's strategies for navigating change, building inclusive cultures, and empowering leaders to achieve operational and human success. Welcome, Rashida.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes, we're delighted that you're joining us on this podcast. And we want to get to know you a little bit better, Rashida, as a person. So at the Employee Wellbeing Council, we believe in remaining human-centric. And so we have determined you are human, so we're going to center on you. And the way we do that is we ask a couple of questions from the Proust questionnaire. Marcel Proust was an essayist who believed that your answers to these questions will allow us to understand your true nature. Are you ready for your first question?
I think so.
Okay. Which talent would you most like to have, Rashida?
I'd love to know how to play basketball, be like really good at playing basketball.
Awesome. And why is that? What is it about basketball that draws? Do you play at all now?
I do not. And I lived in Detroit for a little while, and a good friend of mine actually used to coach basketball. And I remember going to the gym just to hang out and see him practicing with some of the players that he was coaching. And I got on the court and I could dribble a little bit, and it was nice to be able to kind of make a layup. And I remember him telling me, you know, you could have been really good. I'm not. And I have younger sisters who are really good. And now as I watch my nieces and my nephews play sports, and in particular basketball, it just looks like so much fun. Yeah.
It's a great game for sure. What would it be if you were to die and come back as a person or a thing? What would you be?
I think the ability to influence anyone who has the ability to influence in a positive way. That's what I would be.
Neat. And so that ability to influence or serve with purpose, I think, also speaks a bit to your career. So let's talk about that a little bit. Your career has heavily focused on driving operational excellence and in some large organizations. So what are the key elements of building and maintaining that excellence, especially in fast-paced environments like media and technology?
Yeah, there are a number of things, and I think I've evolved my thinking over the years. I remember being young in my career and wanting to learn and do everything. And it's not that I still don't want to learn and do a lot of things, but what I came to understand as I increase my knowledge about Six Sigma and Lean over the years, and then the principles of just like agility. It's figuring out how to kind of maximize impact with the least amount of waste, right? And so some of that requires that you take a step back. And you have to just kind of think from a very neutral position. And you have to be able to kind of put all of the pieces, think about all of the pieces that are interacting with each other, and how they connect. And then from there, it is understanding which pieces you can take away without the whole thing collapsing, right? So a portion of it is based in just the truest sense of curiosity, like how do things work? Why do they work the way that they work? Is there a better way that they actually can work? The other piece is connected to kind of process development, management. But then there's also the human aspect of it, which is really around empathy and understanding why the players are in the positions that they are. Is there a way to even optimize the positions that they're in? Is there a way to kind of shift if they need to be in different positions? And then figuring out a path for change, what some people would call change leadership or change management, which essentially is just how you bring people along without creating a lot of anxiety, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I draw some several things out of what you said. I mean, I really appreciate the notion of curiosity, right? Questioning why, you know, don't just do things because that's the way it's always been done. It's, you know, really question, why are we doing it this way? And this will lead into our next question, in particular in today's era also of, you know, AI now coming into play, that causes us, I think, gives us opportunity to pause and ask those questions. And then what I also really drew out of your answer was, don't do stuff just for the sake of doing it. Recognize, right, there's pieces that you may no longer need to do. And then we layer on the human element as well, which I want to touch on sort of next, is, you know, we are in the era of AI. Excuse me, I have to clear my throat. I was hoping I could fake that for the sake of the recording, but it's not possible. We are in the era of AI. So how do you see the future of work evolving in terms of sort of whether it's organizational structures, leadership expectations? You talked about leading with empathy and employee needs. How do you view sort of the future?
Yeah, I think the future often looks at the past, and it's just in some ways an adjustment, and things move in cycles. And so structures are sometimes large, organizational structures are sometimes large. And then depending on internal and external environments, they need to shrink and become more nimble. I think with the introduction of AI, I do think that there will be an evolution of sorts that looks at how do we shrink our structures, right? How do we shrink our organizational structures? Where are the opportunities to perhaps increase automation, which is different than AI, right? And so sometimes those terms are used interchangeably, but there is a difference. But sticking with AI, I think AI, it creates a different sort of skill set, which I think, again, is heavily based on understanding all of the moving pieces and parts, the full life cycle of what you would consider a process map, in order to effectively figure out where are you going to get the best return on investment, so to speak, because AI is not cheap. So from an organizational structure standpoint, I think that organizations are going to look to figure out what's the most nimble version of itself that it can possibly become. And in some cases, that may mean fewer people. In some cases, depending on the size of the organization, in some cases, it may mean reskilling or upskilling people so that they can effectively kind of build and use that internal knowledge base that they have about the company to create the chat bots and things like that, that may help reduce the friction and workflow within an organization. But think about leadership expectations. I think leadership expectations are going to increase, and increase in the sense that there's a version of what is it considered, like the T shape, right? So you need to have knowledge that's both wide and deep. And I don't see it as being a generalist, but I do see it as maybe a 70% you have domain expertise in one area, but you've got a margin of anywhere from 25 to 30% where you're consistently learning and figuring out how to adapt and reshape and retool yourself. And leadership expectations are going to, this is just my perspective, are going to look for individuals who are more intrinsically motivated, in the sense that they're constant learners. There's less of a need for, or a desire, I should say, for external kind of accolades, so to speak. But you're there recognizing that you're part of a structure, you're part of a team, you're part of figuring out how do you really create the best flow possible for whatever you're doing. And I think the employee needs are continuing to evolve to what you spoke to a little bit earlier, in the sense of employees want to be treated as humans, but there is this need and evolution that is also happening to figure out what exactly does that look like in the landscape of the workplace, where the workplace is a contract for work, while recognizing that, yes, you are a human.
Right, right. And so bringing us back to the notion of understanding all the processes and parts, as you've described, what role and how will data and analytics inform then the approach to people strategies? What do you think?
I think we're still in the early stages of that. And again, it's my opinion, but anyone that's worked with data knows that the data is never 100%, right? So you're always drawing some inferences. You're always in constant kind of improvement mode, constant mode of figuring out how to get better and better information, better and cleaner data. But where you can, then I think it makes sense to have what would be considered some core metrics or KPIs or key performance indicators that help you understand directionally what are your hypotheses, right? What are you ideally trying to measure? What is the end game? How will you know that a program that perhaps you want to implement is successful? And when you think about the people strategy, then it is being able to understand where are the development opportunities, right? It's going to optimize learning paths. Where are the opportunities for where we might have what would be considered single points of failure, because perhaps there are only a few people who know or hold the institutional knowledge related to core processes. Where are the opportunities to understand what are the core skills that are needed to run successfully a department? How do you make sure that you're maximizing those, but then still staying ahead of future trends? And so you're constantly having a conversation around upskilling, retooling, and learning what your bench strength needs to be, and what might be the opportunity to have, I would say a portion of an employee base that might be flexible in nature or fungible because you understand what motivates them and they're super talented, but they also need constant challenge, right? So there's so many different layers that and levers that you can pull just by learning more and more about your people, their skills, what motivates them, and then how does that tie to the actual delivery of the overall business strategy.
Right, right. And so I'm going to bring us to an area that I found really interesting when I was sort of doing my little background research on you. Nothing creepy, I promise. You have your master's degree in psychology and improving leadership behavior. So how has that academic background or your research actually influenced your leadership style and approach to leading teams?
I'm going to back up just a little bit, only because the degree that I earned in psychology was focused on sport psychology, not the traditional master's degree in psychology where you might look at more of the organizational design, but I was really interested in how do you build quality teams? How do you best understand motivators for individuals? How do you take a mix of folks from just various backgrounds, pull them together, and create like a dynamic environment that almost feels organic after a while, right? So having said that, I also have my certification as a yoga instructor. And so that was another kind of filter or lens that I used to determine how I wanted to pull some of these things together. So for me, it was looking at a leadership style that first starts inward, right? And so for me, it's been centering myself so that no matter how much chaos is around me, then I can navigate. And I do believe that when you can do that, then people will follow you, right? And they'll follow you because they too want to know how to navigate through chaos, through nuance, through uncertainty, because that's going to be in any organization where you are. And so I use that. Those, the skills, the intentionality of making sure that you remove as much ego from whatever you're doing as possible, so that at the end of the day, then you're looking at it from the lens of what's going to be the best outcome for everyone as much as possible. You're not always going to get it perfect. You're not always going to get it right. But when you're looking at a situation, then you're able to stay somewhat neutral.
I find that actually super interesting that you studied a sports psychology. I think, you know, maybe more HR and leaders in general should understand some of those tenets, because it is really about motivating a team, right? Whether it's a sports team or it's a work team, it's a group of individuals all driven towards some purpose, whatever that purpose is. And how do we ensure, as you say, collectively that we arrive at that purpose? The other piece that I really thought was interesting is you're talking about centering yourself in some ways first, right? Before then focusing on the others. And I think in leadership, oftentimes, in particular, emerging leaders or new leaders, they think it's all about the other. How do I motivate the other? Rather than taking a pause and thinking about, you know, how do I motivate myself? How do I center myself first? And then I can, right? And then I can focus on the others. So I think that's interesting. And I think it comes to you, to my next question, which is, what is the role that introspection and what is intentional direction? I read that, you know, that you, let's say practice, if that's the right term, intentional direction. So what is that role that those introspection and intentional direction play?
Yeah, so, you know, the introspection connects back to what I was mentioning earlier, and it comes in a number of ways, right? So I'll give you an example. At a certain point in my career, I inherited a team, and on this team was a person who was, I would say, had a particular need to try and please. And the reason why this individual had a particular need to try and please was because of the fact that there had been so much feedback that had been provided to this person. And so there must have been 15 or 20 people at one point that this individual asked me to just connect with, because they had been reaching out to 15 or 20 people to consistently get feedback. And my coaching or my guidance to this individual at a certain point was, please stop. It's like, please stop asking for the feedback, right? Find time to literally be in the moment, which is not easy to do, right? It's a learned behavior. But be in the moment. And then as soon as you can, take a step back and literally think about, how did I feel? What happened? What in the moment feedback did I actually get? And that in the moment feedback does not look like, oh, that was good or that was bad. It is literally the facial expressions, the body language expressions, the verbiage that's used in that particular moment. And so when you're able to kind of heighten your senses and your awareness and just being present in a space, then there's less external feedback that you need. And it doesn't mean that you do not like feedback, because I like feedback, but I like useful feedback. Mm-hmm. And so for me, then it is an act of practice of being present and feeling whatever is coming at me, but then stepping away from it and saying, okay, now what could I have done better? And sometimes people will come to you and they will tell you, but before they tell you, you should already know yourself most of the time, right?
Yeah.
And then when it comes to intentional direction, that connects directly as well to, do you have a sense of your own internal compass? If you have an internal compass that doesn't waver because of the person who's in the room, whether they have a higher position or a higher title, or you're trying to please someone, etc., then you can stay true to a map, right? And that map is your map. And you're the only person, and I'm the only person, right, that knows where I need to move to make the best decision for myself, and weighing all the factors of the implications, right, that it may have on other people. But at the end of the day, you have to make the decision for yourself. And when it comes to leadership behaviors, it's no different, in the sense that if you found your center and you can work from that particular compass, then you're not navigating from a place of, I need to preserve my seat of power, or I cannot share, or I must make sure that this looks like it was all my work, right? Like, you're not making decisions based on what you want that external favor, right, to be from others, but more so you're thinking about the larger picture, the betterment of everyone.
And so I don't think you can have, though, then that intentional direction unless you have introspection. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, if I can't have a compass, or I can't know which direction I'm going, okay, unless I take that moment or take that practice. It's I mean, it is a practice, right? Introspection and being able to I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Being able to be present in the moment, because I was thinking about, as you were speaking about the notion of feedback, right? So oftentimes we go to others for feedback. Meanwhile, as the moment has passed, the way in which they may also picture that feedback will have changed potentially what actually happened in that moment. I'm not sure if I'm making complete
sense. You are. You're making.
Okay. Because right, because now there's other factors that have influenced my perception of what happened in that moment. Mm-hmm. So the feedback I may give may already be a bit clouded by other factors. And then for the person who's actually asking for the feedback, it's true, if they are more aware or practice, you know, thinking about body language, the tone, the eye contact, or you know, other things that were said and the actual words, they should be able to, in essence, garner what the response is, right? You shouldn't have to ask for the feedback, is what I hear you saying.
Yeah,
really interesting, really interesting. And so it does encourage leaders, I mean, truly, to take that moment to pause and reflect, not only, but charge themselves, one, to be present, and then pause and reflect, which I think, you know, oftentimes leaders, we are just sort of rushing. We don't do enough of that. That's great. So I want to bring us sort of to the last question before I ask you another personal question. And we love practical advice on this podcast. So I'd like to ask you, what is one thing that I'm going to do as a leader today to help my team navigate change? As to your point, change is everywhere. It's not just in your organizations, in all organizations. Change, and sometimes, you know, with the soupçon of chaos, in there. So what is one thing I as a leader can do today that will help my team navigate change effectively to ensure that continued well-being? Because so much of what you're talking about is also directly about well-being.
And it might not be today, because today is actually Saturday, but
you didn't have to say it. Just work with me, Rashida. Just work with me.
No. It's okay. Work happens every day, right? We're just present. I try my best to direct people who work for me to have mentors. There's a certain element of coaching that I can do. But I fundamentally believe that people who work for me should also have other outlets, and mentors are excellent outlets. The other thing that I intentionally do with folks on my team, and I try and do it on a daily basis, I check in. It doesn't always look the same. It's not always the same question of how are you. Sometimes it literally is just asking a probing question. And that just gives people space to open up and share a story, right? But if you're listening to that story, then the story gives you clues about how someone is doing. And then from there, there's always a connection that can be made to the work environment. And so being able to actively have a conversation that's first led from a point of human curiosity, but then connecting it to the workplace, is one of the ways that I actually just, I think I help people. And so when it comes to navigating change, I think one of the best things that a leader can do is to have a relationship to where people actually trust you because of the fact that they know that you see them as humans first, and not a resource. And so as change does happen, then they're more comfortable giving you the unvarnished frustrations, etc., which is also part of, I think, being a good leader, being able to take it in, regardless of how it comes, and not judge people.
Right. Absolutely. So when we don't look at our colleagues as widgets, so to speak, right? And then I heard you say, again, the word curiosity, and that sort of fundamentally is, if you're not curious as a leader, whether it's about your team members or process or the way, right, something is working, then you're not likely to have as much success.
Yeah.
So, Rashida, my final question for you is, what would you be? We did that at the beginning. What would it be? So if you were to give your younger self a piece of wisdom or some advice, what would it be?
I took some career risk myself when I was younger, but I would still tell my younger self, take more. I think I may have stayed sometimes in places longer than I should have, when opportunities came my way. And I think when you are younger, then it's important to explore and figure out what the right path is for you.
It's so much easier when you're younger, right? When you get to be risen old like I am, for sure. Not you, but me. Yeah, it's there's so much more weight, right? I mean, I think about my 20s. I now say, so to speak, to young people, like, enjoy your 20s, right? That's the time to explore, and whether it's professionally or personally, and travel, and because it just, it gets a little bit more meaningful when you make those changes as you get older as well. There's greater risks and consequences attached. So on that happy note, on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, I'd really like to thank you, Rashida, for joining us today and sharing your insights.
I would like to thank you for the invite, the very thought-provoking questions about things I honestly have not thought about for a while. So I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize wellbeing in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when wellbeing ignites, wellbeing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.